Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. We're recording Thursday evening because in the wee hours of the morning, we're going to get up and we're going to drive to Austin, Texas. And I understand we'll have a little rain as we get into the greater Austin area some mid-afternoon on Friday. But as of this morning, they still anticipate getting the game in Friday. We may not start on time, but that's the current plan. We'll just have to see what the forecast holds for the next 24 hours or so. But glad you're with us today. Hope it's a payday for you, no matter where you are today. If you're a biweekly or weekly wage earner, maybe payday is today. And so you can get out and go have some fun with your friends and family. We hope that's the case. And for you salaried employees, maybe, you know, it's the end of the month. So tomorrow may be payday for you. No matter how it works, we're glad you're with us. We're going to talk about Texas. We'll talk about the weekend that is to come. A few other couple things we'll talk about. Got a top 10 list. It's of a more personal nature today. We were going to do Dream Theater. I'm going to push that to Monday because we got some bad news yesterday. And no, it's not the David Allen Coe list. Maybe we'll do that one day next week. But no, somebody that I know that I've talked about on the show, it was a friend of mine at a very important time in my life, passed away. So we will spend some time honoring his life and his music today on the show. Man, I tell you, what's one of those things, too, you get to be my age. I'm only 53. And you start seeing some of your friends pass away, and it makes you consider your own mortality. It truly does. And I'm a firm believer in that life is not fair, and that is probably a good thing for most of us, because if life was fair, most of us would be dead and some other people would be alive. But I do believe there is a divine plan to it all, and nothing happens by accident. I don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe in any of that stuff. I believe there is a meaning to everything you do and everything you experience. And much of that is to teach you along the way in hopes that you share some hope and happiness with other people. I truly believe that's the truth of the matter. Speaking of truth, you can find some truth at Bulldog Burger Company. Truth in advertising, truth in pricing, truth in service, truth in nourishment. We're going to eat tonight at one of the Eat With Us group restaurants. Dan and I are going to have a bit of a date night before I leave town. It's always nice, right? To be married this long and still want to get together and spend some time. You know, it's true. And we celebrate a lot of our life activities and family achievements at an Eat With Us group restaurant. Bulldog Burger Company, of course, has been the employer of my youngest now for years. I guess 3 years or so now. It's weird. Like, he's about to take his finals and he'll be a senior next year. And he has no plans to leave Bulldog Burger Company, which I think says a lot about that organization. You know, that a young person can work there, make their friends there, and want to stay there, you know, throughout their college career. He loves it so much, he moved to be closer to work. Yeah, just to make closer to campus, closer to work. It all worked out well. We enjoy going in there, and I tell you, I've had so many of you that have reached out and said that you met my son, and you feel led to email me and tell me what a great young man he is, and that means a lot to me. You can go get service from Ian, too, but all the servers there will do a great job for you because that's what the culture requires. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Find your own favorites on that menu. Of course, some new ones. There may be some new contenders on your own top 10 list of Bulldog Burger offerings. Try the Smash Burgers. Try the Chili Cheese Fries. Try the Bischoff Cheesecake as your dessert. Maybe get that chocolate shake to ride that ride home with a smile, too. That's a lot of dessert. Maybe you may have a choice to make. You may. And that's the great thing about Bulldog Burger Company, is so many quality choices to choose from. Be sure and check them out today, whether you're in town or on the way to town. There's a Bulldog Burger Company on your way. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. I interviewed Coach Jim Schlossnagle this morning. That is a feature that is available over at jeanspage.com for VIP members. If you're not a VIP member, you certainly should be. You can get 50% off the annual subscription price now. And it's super cool to be able to talk to these coaches. There's nobody else providing you that quality of content. Nobody. We've had every SEC coach other than Tim Corbin. And that, again, that was a deal where we just couldn't get it scheduled out, right? Wes Johnson, Georgia, sent me some audio because they played on Tuesday, had to travel on Wednesday. We played on Thursday, so we couldn't coordinate that. But outside of that, we've had everybody else. And I certainly appreciate these people making themselves available. And to get a one-on-one interview with a sitting SEC coach in any sport is a big deal. And we take a lot of pride, but, man, we have a tremendous amount of gratitude for these coaches making some time for us to just talk about baseball. And you can read everything Coach Schlossnagel had to say about his team and your team over at jeanspage.com today. What you may not know, and it might be surprising to many, is that Mississippi State has won more games this year than Texas. What? Yeah, State's won 35, they've won 33. Now, they've played a couple of games less than we're 35 and 10, they're 33 and 9. They've had some games washed out. And they're 13 and 7 in the conference. Your Bulldogs are 13 and 8. And probably the only reason Texas isn't 13 and 8 is because the game 3 against Texas A&M got rained out. So it's important to understand that aspect of it. A lot of people think, oh, Texas, Texas. Listen, I've got a great deal of respect for the program that Texas is. But this year, they're really right there with your Bulldogs. They've just been ranked ahead of us all year because they were ranked high to begin with, as they should have been. A lot expected of this team, and they've kind of stepped up and realized much of their potential. But these teams are pretty comparable. We've got to play it at their place for their 23-3, though. So let's kind of see how they got here. They opened up with UC Davis. Are you big UC Davis fans? Do you know a lot about UC Davis baseball? I mean, honestly, have you kept up with it? I haven't. So let's kind of peek in and just see how UC Davis done this year. Of course, everybody's got some, you know, they got some non-conference opponents that hadn't done much. That's all of us. But UC Davis didn't put up a lot of opposition against Texas, nor were they expected to. But you know, they're 20 and 24, 9 and 15 in their conference. And so you're not a lot to write home about. Back on opening day, the Longhorns get them 12-2 in a mercy rule affair that ended in seven innings. And then they win 6-4, 9-1. They mercy rule them 14-4. And then they get Michigan State, you know, the baseball power that is Michigan State. I mean, it's a helmet sticker win, right? I mean, because it's not, Michigan State is not a great college baseball program. But they get all three of those, 8-1, 3-1, and 4-0. So they limit the Spartans to just two runs on the weekend. They mercy rule Texas Rio Grande Valley 14-0, seven innings. Then they play in this Bruce Bolt College Classic. They get Coastal 8-1, and that's right around the time they begin to have these injuries. They get Baylor 5-2, and then Ohio State 10-3. That's the same series that Ole Miss played in, you may recall. Now, they get Houston Christian, another midweek game, 16-3 and 7. And then they get USC Upstate, the former home of your Noah Sullivan. Didn't go well. Texas gets them 14-2 and 8, 11-9 in the middle game, and then on Sunday, 13-3. Texas State, the Bobcats, hosted Texas back on March the 10th, and the Longhorns win 15-4. Ole Miss kind of has a freaky win, and you guys are maybe remember all this craziness in that ball game, and Ole Miss ends up winning it in 11 in game one. Against Texas, and you thought, because everybody thought, I just can't wait for them to lose. I can't wait for them to lose. And then Ole Miss wins game one at Texas. The Rebels went 5 in the ninth. They were down 7-4. 7-4 going to the ninth. The game ends 9-8 in favor of Ole Miss and 11. It's pretty crazy how that stuff works. But, yeah, it was a wild game. But the Longhorns bounced back. They went 11-2 and then 8-2. Tarleton State rolls into Austin, Texas, and they get a 6-1 win on Tuesday, back on March 17th on St. Paddy's Day. Then Texas goes to Auburn. Auburn wins game one. And then Texas rallies to win game two and three, 7-6-5-0. Midweek loss to Houston, 9-7. The one sweep they've had in SEC play came against Oklahoma. And you kind of expect that, right? I mean, you kind of expect Texas-Oklahoma to be kind of a rivalry series. I mean, it kind of carries over from football. But these games were interesting. Texas kind of wins in a variety of ways here. They went 14-0 game one. They went 4-3-10 and then 5-4-10. So, like, once they got through game one, these games were incredibly competitive. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you know, on this show, we absolutely believe in taking care of our mental health. The month of May is a reminder that whatever you're going through, you don't have to go through it alone. I tell you guys all the time, everybody needs somebody they can tell everything to. Life's a journey. Some days are good. Some days can feel overwhelming. Whatever is keeping you up at night, it's easy to feel like you may have to figure it all out by yourself. The truth of the matter is, no one has the corner of the market on good answers, and no journey should have to be taken alone. Having someone with you to listen, to understand, and support you can make all the difference in the world. Guys, I've had so many challenges in life, right? Guys, 2022 was a difficult year on me, and I relied on people that I trusted. And that's a network of people that I built up over decades. But the reality of it is maybe you feel a little alone with whatever you're dealing with. That's where BetterHelp comes in. Quality therapist that will work according to a very strict code of conduct. They're fully licensed in the United States. There is also the therapist match commitment. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. There's a short questionnaire that helps you identify your needs and preferences. And our 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means we typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from all of those tailored recommendations. You don't have to do it alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Texas State makes the return trip to Austin. The Longhorns win 10-8. Then they go to South Carolina, and guess what happens? Again, game one, I mean, just kind of rattling the cage a little bit about these game ones on SEC play. South Carolina gets them 9-1. 9-1. And there wasn't a ton of Longhorn offense, even though they win the series. They get games 2-5, 3-4, 1. And, of course, that's with Monty Lee coaching the team. A lot of you guys kind of wanted to crap on, you know, State going to South Carolina and getting a sweep. Well, Texas couldn't do it. And Mississippi State and South Carolina really only had, you know, really one game you look at and say was really competitive. Of course, one was because of one swing on Friday. But, you know, State at least gets a little bit of life for one of those games. But, again, you get beat 9-1. Again, game one. They mercy rule Incarnate Word 16-4. And then game one, again, game one, they lose to A&M 9-8. The next day, A&M gets them 11-4, and then Sunday is washed out. So that's where you see that anomaly in the standings, where Texas and Texas A&M have played one game less than everybody else, and they won't be made up. They get Texas A&M Corpus Christi 14-7. And then 2 weekends ago, they played Alabama. And Alabama, of course, was kind of riding high, but Texas gets 2 out of 3. They win 10-2, 3-1, and then lose the rubber game 2-1. It looks like everybody still had pitching. The game against Air Force was canceled, and then last weekend, they went to Nashville. They win game 1, 11-4, lose game 2, 6-0, and then in 10 innings, Texas beats Vanderbilt 4-3. And earlier this week, Sam Houston State gave Texas all kinds of trouble, if you recall. Longhorns had to walk it off in the ninth, 15-14 is the final. But again, these game one and SEC play has been different. It just has been. And maybe that bodes well for us. You know, we'll see. You know, two of the best pitchers in the country going head-to-head, and Dylan Valantis and Tomas Valenkas. And Dylan Valantis last year was a closer, had a dozen saves, and two of those happened in Starkville, Mississippi. Now, one of them he just threw a third of an inning. The other one he threw about an inning. But we know how talented he is. Big, long, lean, left-hander, throws mid-90s, has 5 pitches. All very interesting. We're going to play exceptionally well. One of the players that I asked Coach Schlossnagel about was Anthony Pack, Anthony Pack Jr. He's a freshman from California. Guys, he is leading Texas in hitting with a .362 average. And it's not like it's some anomaly where he played half the games. He started 42 games. He's got 149 at-bats. He's got 5 jacks, 15 doubles, 37 RBI. Only struck out 25 times, which is one of the fewest among the regulars. And he's 16 of 17 in stolen bases. He's only grounded in a 1 double play. That's a freshman. It's a guy to really watch. Where's number 6? Aiden Robbins obviously has had a big year for them. 18 home runs, 46 RBIs, hitting .357. Also 10 of 11 in stolen bases. They will run the bases kind of up and down a little bit in this order. I got a few guys that don't have much. But, you know, they got a handful of guys that have got double-digit attempts. That's something to watch. Carson Tindy, of course, a catcher that we attempted to get last year, ends up going to Texas. He's got 16 jacks for 39 RBI. Sounds like it would have worked out either way for him. But the strikeout rate's pretty high, 46 Ks for him, which is second most on the team, only behind Casey Borba with 54. And Casey's hitting .276. But 11 jacks. They've got some power up and down this order. They've got 70 home runs, but as a staff, they've only allowed 26. Dylan Valantis, who will pitch on Friday, has allowed just one home run in 10 appearances this year. Let's kind of jump into the pitching stuff here. That's a good segue for us. We will see Dylan Valantis on Friday. 6-0 record, 2.06 ERA. He's got 56 and two-thirds of an innings pitch, and he's allowed 41, which is well south of one hit per inning. He's allowed just 13 earned runs, 80 strikeouts against 17 walks. He has allowed just 8 extra base hits this year. 8. Let that sink in for a second. And 56. So that's 1 extra base hit per 7 innings, thereabouts. So essentially that works out, and he usually works about 6 innings, but basically 1 extra base hit per outing. Those are big numbers. Teams are only hitting 193 against him. And the secret with him is the cutter. Great cutter, great curveball. We see a lot of fastball slider combo guys that work in a change. We see a bunch of those guys at the SEC. Tons of them. This guy's a fastball curveball guy that works in the cutter. So it's a different pitch mix. So there's not a lot of carryover from week to week on your scout. Big 6'6 guy with an overhand delivery, the fastball and curveball tunnel out of the same arm slot with the same arm speed, which makes that curveball even more effective. I've already run the numbers. The curveball is the pitch of choice in full counts. Typically, it's a fastball because you don't want to walk anybody, right? What does that tell you about the confidence he has in that curveball that he can throw it for a strike when he absolutely has to have one? It's important to notice, right? So, yeah, this is going to be one of the best pitchers that we face the entire year. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Ruger Riojas is the game two starter. He is 5-2 with a 3.88 ERA. He's got 11 starts on the year, 55 and two-thirds of an innings pitch, and he's right there at one per, right at 52. He's allowed 24 earned runs, 89 strikeouts against 12 walks. So the strikeout-to-walk ratio is even better for Riojas, but he's got one less appearance, and so, you know, maybe it kind of comes out in the wash. The thing with him, though, is he's hittable. He's around the plate. Not a ton of swing and miss with him. There is with Valantes. But Riojas, 242 batting average against. Now, on Sunday, Luke Harrison is set to go. He's 4-2 with a 3.93 ERA. 55 innings pitch, and again, right at 1 per 50, just under 1 per 50 hits on the year. 24 earned runs, 61 strikeouts against 23. So that goes more back to the 3-1 thing, right? 3-1. But again, batting average against 242. So there are going to be pitches to hit. Like if you begin to think about, we kept re-emphasizing game one. Even though Valantes at times can be somewhat invincible, the bullpen has to take over. So we got to make sure we're in the game when he leaves the game. And obviously, we have a guy that can post some zeros too. Didn't have a great outing last week. We expect him to bounce back. This is one of those money-making events. And neither of these guys are draft eligible. Both of them are sophomores, so they're going to be around another year. But again, when you get into their Friday-Saturday pitching, it's kind of comparable to what you see. Riojas, the right-hander, Harrison, the left-hander. And Harrison's a guy at times that struggled a little bit with control. Obviously, most walks on the team. He also has 8 hit-by-pitches and is tied for the team lead in wild pitches. And so, I don't want to overemphasize the importance of Game 1, but if we win Game 1, we're winning this series. Right? And it's so easy because you start thinking, well, this is a road series and it's tough for us to win on the road. Well, we've actually played pretty well on the road. I don't know if you have recalled that. You know, maybe you've kept up, maybe you haven't, but we have. You know, and let's kind of run that back a second. Because I think, again, sometimes we get so acutely aware of what's in front of us, we don't think about what we've done. We are 8-3. In road games, 8-3. One of those was a midweek game against Southern Miss. The other two came against Arkansas. Then you sweep Ole Miss and Oxford, and you sweep South Carolina. And a lot of people said, well, you know, Steve, we got fat against South Carolina and OSU. They're 15th and 16th. Was the sweep in Oxford against a bad team? I would suggest no. A lot of people wanted to, like, leave Ole Miss dead for buried after we swept them, and then they went 12-4, including series win at Florida and a sweep of LSU. And then they dropped the series this past week, and again, a whisker away from being swept, but a whisker away from winning that series against the team that's going to win the SEC. So rather than us kind of diminish our accomplishments, let's kind of look at it for what it is. And again, if you're Jim Schlossnagel, and I'm not, but if you are, that's one of the things you look at, is Mississippi State has played really well on the road this year, especially in conference play. Those are the things you kind of look at and you begin to kind of ask yourself, right? So, you know, what really is this team? And you can say, but Steve, we played those games in Arlington. Yeah, we won two out of three of them, and those were on a neutral field. And I would say somewhat partisan, because we had some good folks there, for sure. And, you know, of course, we played Tulane in Biloxi and then played Ole Miss in Jackson or in Pearl. So that's your five neutral site games. And then, you know, outside of the SEC Road Series in Southern Miss, we played the game at Samford. So that accounts for your 11 away games. But you've played at Arkansas, you've played at Ole Miss, and you've played at South Carolina. And you're 7-2. And so for those people out there that are forecasting, oh, we just don't need to get swept. Guys, we actually have a chance to go win this series. And I don't just mean because we play the games. I'm just kind of spelling it out for you. Now, do I think we're going to win the series? I don't know if I'm ready to go there. I know we're going to get one. I feel confident of getting one. But I truly believe if we win on Friday, we're going to win the series. And I think there's a lot of people in college baseball that are just like look at the rankings and say, well, you know, it's Texas. And listen, they've been great at home, but some's got to give. I think this series is split going into Sunday. And then whoever can get the best Sunday pitching is going to win. But I, again, feel confident that we're going to get one, and I think we possibly could get two. Let's get a little deeper into this bullpen thing with them. Sam Cozart, very talented freshman, has been absolutely outstanding. Got six A's for them. Coach Schlossnagel tells me that he will be a starting pitcher for them eventually. He's kind of following the same development plan that Dylan Volantis did. Volantis starts out in the bullpen. He was a starter in high school. Goes to the bullpen, works under their strength and conditioning program, their pitching program, and then he becomes a starter. That's what they're expecting with Sam Cozart, too. Now, Sam Cozart is 6-0 with a 1.83 ERA, six saves, 15 appearances. He actually made some starts. These numbers are crazy. 39.1 innings pitched. He's allowed 16 hits. That's it. Less than a half per. He's allowed 9 runs this year, 57 strikeouts against 9 walks. Teams are hitting 119 against him. And he's a freshman, doing this largely in the Southeastern Conference. It's pretty interesting, right? So, you know, that's a name you got to know. Hayden LaFeu is another. He's got 12 appearances, all out the bullpen. He's 3-1 with a 2.45 ERA, but he's only worked 14.2 innings. Batting average against for him, 0.070. But they've got some other guys, like Max Grubbs, who hasn't been nearly as effective, and that's a guy that's been around a little bit. He's got 18 appearances, 2-0 record with an ERA of 4.67. Batting average against him is 2.69. And he's given up right at a hit per, 28 hits in 27 innings. Struck out 26, walked 11. So he's just over 2-1, almost 2.5. And so I share that with you is because, yes, they have a couple of dominant relievers, but they have some other guys that have been a little bit up and down. Best case for us, and we talked about this a little bit against Tennessee, right? Burn their best reliever or two in game one and hopefully in a loss for them. Didn't work out for us against Tennessee. It didn't. But that's got to be the game plan. And you know, unless something crazy happens, game one is nearly limp, nip and tuck, just one or two runs. So people go all in to win it. LSU did that last week. They go all in to win it and then just completely run out of pitching come Sunday. And they had some guys pitch multiple times in a weekend. And that's typically what happens when you've got injuries and you've got a lack of depth. But this is a Texas team that can be beat. And anybody that thinks that Texas is a far and away better team than us is deluding themselves. Of course, I remember what happened last year. As many of you do. We got swept last year. We did. And you remember how crazy that weekend was when we had to play 2-7s? Maybe you've forgotten about that. But, you know, real quickly, and let's be honest about this. Is this year's Mississippi State team better than last year's? You say, well, see, of course. Of course it is. And I would agree with that. I don't know who would disagree with that. I think it's pretty safe to say that the 2026 Bulldogs are better than the 2025 Bulldogs. All due respect. But maybe you remember, we lost game one last year 8-7. And we're just kind of cruising along here in a 5-3 ball game, and we get to the seventh, and we give up a five spot in the seventh. Maybe you remember, maybe you've forgotten. That's what happened. Give up the big home run to Borba in the seventh to make it an 8-5 game. You know, and that's the thing. Like, if you just make a pitch there, it's tied. And we end up scoring two in the ninth to make it an 8-7 ball game. But, you know, we mishandled some things, and Chase Hungate took the loss there. But it's a very competitive game. Do you remember the rest of these games? I'm going to run them back for you real quick. We had to play two on Sunday because of the rain. Two sevens. We give up a three spot in the second. And it's a 3-1 ball game until the fifth, and then we tie it. And then guess what happens? Bellew, who was one of the best players in the country last year, takes an 0-2 pitch and hits a 2-run home run, and then we couldn't do anything in the bottom half. So we lose 5-3. And then the final game of the doubleheader and the weekend, Texas gets up 1-0. We tie it in the third. They go back up in the fourth, and so it's a 2-1 ball game going to the seventh. And what do? We give up two runs in the seventh. One of those, we walk in a run. And so we're right there with Texas in every one of these ball games until the very end. And that's an SEC, that's a Texas team last year that won the Southeastern Conference. And that's one of the questions you ask yourself. We just talked about, is this Mississippi State team better than last year? Yeah. Now my next question, is this Texas team better than what they put together last year? Remember, that team won 22 SEC games and won the Southeastern Conference by two games. Good chance it's not going to happen this year. I would venture to say that Mississippi State is markedly better and Texas is a little bit worse than they were last year, even though they're the number four team in the country. And I know that Texas had some struggles at times in the midweek last year especially. That's why they were the number eight seed, not seeded higher in the tournament. They were a top eight national seed this last year and should be this year. But the gap between this year's team and last year's team is different. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Yeah. 25 years of experience. Yeah, get his expertise and know-how working for you. There's a little bit of a life hack, too, they never tell you about when you're young. When it gets time to buy a home, get your pre-qualification letter. That way you're not shopping above your means, and then your real estate agent has some parameters to work with to get you in your starter home or your next home, knowing that you've already got approved financing. That's, again, that's an important aspect of this nobody tells you about. So as you work through this process, you need to have somebody that knows the ins and outs of underwriting. That's Blair Chandler. Yeah. Licensed to practice in multiple states. Thus the name closewithblair.com, right? Because he knows how to get you to the closing table when so many others can't. He also is a guy that knows how to construct loans to give you the best chance for approval. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, perhaps that game day condo, that may prove to be more affordable than you think, Blair's the only name to know. And if you're not ready, he can help you get ready to buy a home. So life may throw you a curveball. Maybe you've got a familial change. Maybe you've got a job change, relationship change, whatever. When life throws you a curveball, let Blair Chandler do some of the heavy lifting for you and help you get into your next home. That's Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. All right, we had a tragedy within the friend group, and even though I haven't spoken to him in many years, my friend Benny Bruce passed away yesterday of brain cancer, and I want to tell you a little bit about his story. Before I met Benny, Benny watched the movie The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years. That's the Penelope Spheris documentary that was legendary in my circle of friends, and really around the world. People that were into 80s metal just thought it was incredible. Kind of showed the behind the scenes and all these, you know, bands trying to make it. There was a band on the show that was profiled named Tuff, T-U-F-F. Benny loved them and thought, you know what, hey, I could add something to that band. So Benny sells a bunch of his stuff, packs all of his belongings in a Chevy S10 pickup truck with a camper shell, drives to Hollywood, California, stays with a friend for a while, and eventually bugs Tuff into letting him be in the band for a while. He was an offstage performer, but he was kind of the unofficial fifth member of the band. Did several shows with them on a West Coast run. Matter of fact, I got the news yesterday off Stevie Rochelle's feed and reached out to some other friends and music and confirmed it that, yeah, he had passed away. But when I met Benny, he was in a band called Reality, and they were opening for us when I was doing some shows with Cervello. And I loved the whole band. It was a singer named Byron that I didn't know as well. And, of course, there was Jeff Lane, who was very talented, and then Nicky Minnelli, whose son is in a band out of New Orleans called Be Kind, Please Be Kind and Rewind. I think that's the name of it. But anyway, I became fast friends with all those guys. And at one of the lowest points of my life, I had to go to New Orleans for something. I can't remember what it was. I think I was taking somebody to the airport, I think. But anyway, on the way back, I stopped to visit with Benny. And this guy told him kind of what was going on with me. And he said, hey, man, you're welcome to stay here. There were already four people living in a two-bedroom apartment. I said, dude, where would I sleep? And he goes, we'll figure it out. You know, he's just the kind of guy. Right. And I ultimately passed on that. But there were times in my life I looked back and said, man, what if I had moved in with Benny? Maybe I wouldn't have gotten in trouble. But you know what? Maybe I wouldn't have gone to drug rehab either and turned my life around. Right. There's always that. Right. There's always two sides of the coin. But even after I got clean and sober, I stayed in contact with Benny. And after Byron left Reality, they changed the name of the band to Pencils and Crayons and eventually Crush UK. They recorded a couple of albums independently and then eventually decided, hey, maybe new music is not the way for us to go. And they formed the Molly Ringwalds. They became the Molly Ringwalds. And Jeff Sparky Lane is still fronting that band. I messaged him today. I hadn't talked to him in ages. And on Dan and I's first date that she invited herself on, I was going to go see those guys play. I said, I'm going to a show this weekend. And she goes, hey, I want to go. And I wanted her to go. I did. But we went down there, had our first kiss on the way down. And, of course, I get there, paparazzi's in Baton Rouge. And Benny sees you when I walk in. And they take a quick break. And we get a chance to kind of catch up a little bit. And spend some time with them. And I think it impressed her that I knew the band. But she did know I was going to see some friends play. And yeah, probably once a month or so for probably a couple of years, Benny and I talked on the phone and just kind of caught up with what all they had going on. And, you know, life was changing for me. And I got married. And of course, we started thinking about kids and, you know, I put another band together, sent Benny a tape and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, and eventually just decided, you know what, music is not in my future. But it was for him. And about a year ago, Benny went to the ER having some excruciating headaches, and eventually they found out that that he had a tumor. And so we fought it for, you know, the balance of a year. And I think he should be in the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame. That's what I think. I think the story of, you know, being out in Hollywood during the metal scene was great, but he came back and he put together a couple of bands and things were good. But then the Molly Ringwalds, of course, are kind of known the world, the country over. And that was one of the things I wrote about today, is that, you know, while I'm a little bit sad, I'm also very grateful that my friend made so many other people happy. So in honor of my friend Benny Bruce, we're going to do top 10 of the band Crush UK. Because they recorded two albums, Romantic, Depressive, and Whatever. And they're available on Spotify. And there is more than just the 10 songs that we're going to talk about, but these are the 10 that I like. And again, hey, they didn't have massive commercial appeal. This is just some guys that enjoyed making music. And I think Benny, there was a part of him You know, after being in Tough, and then Tough, of course, going on to some moderate success and being on MTV and touring with all these big bands and stuff, I think there was a part of Benny where he had to record music. And so they were able to put a couple things together. And again, while it didn't get, you know, a lot of commercial success or national acclaim, it made me really proud of my friend that he kind of filled that need in himself. And as great as a musician he was an even better person. And I just wanted to share that with you just because of the fact that I think Benny's story is a spectacular one. And he died too soon, but I've never known anybody that chased their dreams harder than he did. And he made a lot of them come true. And he had a lot of fun doing it. And so I wanted to pay tribute to him on the show today. So here's my top 10 from Crush UK. We won't spend a lot of time talking about all this, but I just wanted you guys to have an opportunity, and I'd love for them to pick up some new listeners, even though the band has been, that part of the band has been defunct now, I think they recorded whatever, like 2002. And then it's kind of been all Molly Ringwald's ever since. So number 10 is Don't Wanna Wake Up. Number 9 is Fading Light. I kind of like the Cure vibe to this. 8 is Dust. Number 7 is You'll Have Love, and then Whatever, right? Which is end up being the title of the album, Whatever. Number 6, In the Dark. Number 5, Mirrorball. Number 4, Loser A Go-Go. Number 3, Where Do I Sign? Number 2, It's Not You, It's Me. And number 1, Beneath Purple Skies. And if you follow the Molly Ringwalds on social media, when they broke the news yesterday that Benny passed away, that's the song that they used. And clearly that's a song that meant a lot to Benny. But the thing that I think about in all of this, right, not just my own mortality and the fact that I'm getting older and the fact that he died way too young, is that all of us have dreams. All of us. And so many of us just kind of wait around to be discovered. And some fortunate people, that's really the case. They do get discovered. But by and large, you have to go make it happen. You do. You can't just sit around and wait. And I don't know many people that would have had enough confidence in themselves and belief in themselves to just leave their life in Slidell, Louisiana, and everybody and everything they knew on the North Shore, and pack up and move to Hollywood to chase a dream. I really don't. A lot of people talk about it. A lot of people think about it. But most people aren't about it. But Benny Bruce was. And when he came home as a conquering hero. And I remember one day we were sitting around just kind of reminiscing. And I was so jealous of some of the stories that he had and places that he'd been and people that he'd met. And he was showing me some things that he'd kept, and there was like this picture of the band Tough with Benny in the middle. And they were all like kind of had their hands pointed towards him, like kind of introducing him as the new member of the band. It didn't take. But man, what a memory, right? He didn't just pack up and go out there and try. He did it. And while it didn't last long, I think I'd rather have 6 months of amazing than a lifetime of nothing special. And that's what I think about with Benny. And though while he could never fully recapture that, I think the Molly Ringwalds allowed him to experience maybe the funner part of it. You know, not all the business and industry commercial BS that goes along with music, but just going out there and playing your favorite cover songs from the 80s. And then watching people kind of lose their minds and just kind of forget about the problems in their life for a while. And he gave that to people. I mean, how many of your friends can you say that about, right? And that's the reason that I think Benny deserves some time on the show today. Is the lesson learned from the life of Benny Bruce is that you can make a measure of your dreams come true. And if you're lucky, you can make them all come true. But he did it on a little bit of a smaller scale. But he was a professional musician all of his adult life. And then when he got tired of doing it, He went to work with the St. Tammany School System and the library and did all their audiovisual stuff. And he did a documentary about the band Crush UK. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. And I'm about 20 minutes into it. You know, I'm going to miss my friend. And I just maybe hope that somebody else within the sound of my voice will listen to this and say, you know what? I've always wanted to do this. And then they just go do it. And even if you don't make it, wouldn't you rather fail than never know, right? That's kind of where I come down on all this stuff. And, you know, I got a lot of people blow smoke up my skirt. I do. And I got a lot of people from back in those days that feel like I made a mistake by not staying in music or at least having something to do with music. But I don't feel like I missed anything. Right, I don't sit around thinking, what if? I married who I was supposed to marry, right? And it's been a lot more better than worse. It hadn't always been peaches and cream 365 days a year, right? That's not a standard that's even feasible, right? But, you know, being married, it's for grown people. And raising kids is for grown people. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do. Marriage and family were very important to me. So that's a decision that I made, and I have no regrets about that, because the memories that I have of being a husband and raising children mean more to me than all the other stuff did. That's not to say that, you know, Benny and I are better than worse. We're just different. You know, he didn't have those other things that I had. So there's a trade-off in life, and you got to decide what's important to you. But I'm so grateful to have been friends with Benny, and even though we haven't talked in years, about a year ago, it's so funny how life works. About a year ago, I had this thought that just about him, like I hadn't thought about him in a couple years or so, and it just kind of blew up, man. It just, I'm sitting here looking at the phone now. It's April 4th, 2025. So it was shortly after he had been diagnosed with cancer. And I believe in the cosmic clues, right? And I sent this to him. I said, Benny, it's the greatest club dancer that you've ever known, your old pal Steve, from formerly of Cervello. You've been on my mind for the last several days, and I just felt the need that I needed to reach out to you. A lot of water under the bridge has passed since the last we spoke. I'd love to catch up with you when you have some time. I ended up messaging Stevie Rochelle, lead singer from Tough, and just, you know, kind of asked a little bit about it. And he goes, yeah, Steve, thanks for the message. And yeah, Benny lived with us for a while and did some offstage keys for us. And hey, thank you for always supporting Tough. And, you know, that stuff is just, you know, it's important. So back on February 4th, I text him again. Just checking in on you. In some respects, you were a hero to me before my life went crazy. I hope you're well and on the mend. And on March 7th, and this is a text he didn't read, I said, I'm just following up with you to see how you are. I don't know anything about your situation. I called your job and they told me that you were on leave for a while to recover. I just wanted you to know that I loved you. And I'm very grateful for your friendship. And I ended up calling him. And he didn't answer, obviously. He was dealing with a lot bigger things than me, right? But I wanted him to know what a difference that he had made in my life and the inspiration that I had gotten from him. But also, too, I wanted him to know that he made it. That even if he didn't fully get to do everything he wanted to do, that he made people stand up and dance and sing and be happy. And that it's one of those things that most people can never say. And so, with that in mind, that's my tribute to my friend Benny Bruce, and I wish that we had stayed in better contact over the years, but, you know, you get older and you start paying the mortgage and raising kids, and you just kind of drift apart, and it's not anybody's fault, and it doesn't mean you love them any less. You know, you just have different interests, but every time that the Molly Ringwalds would go across my Facebook feed, I'd always think about him, and I thought, he did it. He did it. He found a way to make a go of this music thing. And he did it. And so, Benny, wherever you are today, I love you, brother. And we'll see you on the other side. All right, time for the next segment of the show, and it's brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. Why? Well, they got the stuff we want. We want more Mississippi State merch, and when we're winning, we can't have enough of it. We can't wait to get out and rep the brand when the Bulldogs are winning. Having a big baseball season, we expect some bigger things to come. We do. So get some new MORS merchandise at Campus Bookmart. Maybe get that Duty Noble Field approved cooler. We're going to have postseason baseball at Mississippi State. Barring something unforeseen, be thinking about that. Start making some plans. Maybe get those requests from work. Notices in. Yeah. Go ahead and outfit you and your family in the latest in maroon and white fashions. When it's gift buying time in your life, think Campus Bookmart. On behalf of all Bulldogs, you can make life easier on yourself and make our lives better with more Mississippi State merch. Don't overthink it. Don't try to get too cute. Don't try to reinvent the mousetrap. Just buy us Mississippi State merchandise. That'll make us happy. That's a win-win-win all the way around. You win. It makes, you know, the gift buying process a lot easier. Just buy Bulldog People Bulldog merch, and you get the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see them the next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, you can still support a Starkville business by visiting them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net, courtesy of Al Gore's Internet. Use promo code BSR to get free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, let's take a look at the SEC weekend to come. It's a big, big weekend. As you guys know, it's a big weekend. And the closer we get to the end, the more these games matter. They all matter. But as we get to the end of the regular season, you begin to kind of recognize you're running out of time to make your move. And so kind of here we are as we enter the eighth weekend of SEC play. Georgia, with a 15-6 record, leads the Southeastern Conference by a half game over Texas A&M, a team last year that was picked to win the national championship and didn't make the tournament. Well, the Aggies are 14-6. Then there's Texas, a game and a half back at 13-7. And then, all alone in fourth place, your 10th-ranked Bulldogs, two games back of Georgia with a 13-8 record. And as we talked about, it's going to be very difficult to catch Georgia because they have a very advantageous schedule down the stretch for a team that's looking to win the SEC championship. On the Mississippi State side of things, if we're looking to play our way into a top eight, we have some very highly ranked RPI teams ahead of us. So we have a good opportunity to achieve that goal too. It could be tough for us to win the SEC based on who we're facing, but there again, there's a reason to play the games. Just a game back of us is Auburn at 12-9, and then there's a bit of a logjam with Florida, Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, all right there at 11-10. All of them have hosting aspirations. I think it's pretty safe to say, barring some unforeseen run to glory, they're not going to play their way into a top eight. You know, I guess somebody could go on a 9-game winning streak and finish 20-10. They would, but you know, when you're a game over 500, you kind of are who you are. And with 9 games left, there's not a lot of room to make a move that high up into the postseason pecking order, but you could certainly play your way into a hosting opportunity. But based on the available data right now, I'd say probably 6 host spots for the SEC. That's what I think now. 6, maybe 7, depending on how things shake out around the country. So let's kind of look and take a look at, you know, kind of who's who this weekend. And who could make a move this weekend? Vanderbilt and Alabama are already underway. That's the only Thursday game, and they got started early trying to beat some of this weather. Vanderbilt's up early in this ballgame, 2-0 in the third. We'll peek back in on them. And Tyler Fay, not getting knocked around, but they're hitting him a little bit. Through 3 innings pitched, but it's not even 3 full innings. He's allowed 2 runs on 5 hits. Now, looking ahead to the rest of the – Vanderbilt, Alabama, you know, I hate to sound like an Alabama hater. I just don't think they're for real. And I think Vanderbilt takes that series. Missouri is at Georgia. We talked about this earlier, the favorable schedule for Georgia. Got Missouri coming in this week, so anybody looking to make ground up on Georgia is going to need Missouri to pull off an upset. And based on what we know, and based on what we believe about Foley Field, it's going to be tough for Missouri to do that. I mean, I look for Georgia to sweep. And while they won't mathematically wrap up the SEC title this weekend, it's pretty much, I think, assured, barring a major upset. Tennessee is at Kentucky. And again, Kentucky has kind of had, Nick's kind of had their number, even when Tony was there. And now Nick and the Cats' backs are against the wall. They're going to come out swinging. I think it's a split, but I think Tennessee takes it. I think Tennessee's just got better starting pitching. One of the things that kind of works against Tennessee, though, Kentucky a little farther north, and we're having some unseasonably cooler temperatures. So I don't think the ball is going to carry as well at Kentucky. And Kentucky's going to be a scrappy ball club. So I think it's a very competitive series, but I'm going to take Tennessee 2-1. Ole Miss is at Arkansas. And granted, Arkansas hadn't been nearly as good at home this year as they have been historically. I think last year they lost 4 games at home. They've lost a lot more than that this year, right? And just because of the fact that now you're curious, I'm going to look it up for you. I am. I'm going to look it up for you. Just got to think you deserve to know. You come to this show not only to be entertained, but to be informed. They're 18-10 at home. So more than double of what they gave up last year. So not quite the raucous environment. And it's not just because Arkansas maybe hadn't performed up to some people's expectations. And I still believe Arkansas got a very favorable schedule. I just don't think they took full advantage of it. I still like Arkansas to take 2 out of 3. I do. These road series, especially that are toss-up, and this Ole Miss offense over the course of the last couple of ball games against us and in Game 3 against Georgia has been interesting. It has been. They haven't done much the last 20 innings or so. Arkansas has really good starting pitching. Ole Miss does too. But again, Hunter Elliott maybe hadn't been exactly what they want him to be. And I think with those left-handed hitters in the order at Arkansas, he could be effective. This Arkansas offense doesn't really scare you. But this Ole Miss offense is kind of feast or famine. You run into a hot pitcher, and it's a tough day for the offense. So we're going to say Arkansas, very competitive series. I do like Ole Miss to get one, so we'll take the Razorbacks 2-1. Now, you guys already know my feelings about Vandy and Alabama. Florida's at Oklahoma. This is an intriguing series to me. Two teams similarly situated. Florida's 29-16 overall, 11-10 in the league. Oklahoma's 28-13, and then 10-9 in the league. So just a game behind Florida, but with comparable overall records. Florida's lost some midweek games, but they've got elite pitching. I like Florida on Friday. I do. I like them on Friday. I just wonder on Sunday, like if it's a split going into Sunday, who has the better Sunday pitching? I honestly think it may be Oklahoma. And I wouldn't even call it an upset because Oklahoma's ranked higher. Oklahoma is playing at home. But we're going to take the Sooners 2-1. And I think that might knock Florida into a very interesting situation when it comes to hosting. Let me tell you one of the reasons that I say that. We talked about some of these teams that still have some room to operate and some upward mobility opportunities. We think we all agree there's room for everybody to either improve or worsen their situation in 3 weeks. A lot can change in 3 weeks. But this Florida team, I think why this is a crucial series. And listen, Florida's going to win some games down the stretch. And they're a team that you really don't want to get hot in the postseason because they have a ton of talent. They get Kentucky next week, and then they go to LSU. And here's what I would say about that LSU series. It's easy to say, well, Steve, Florida, LSU hadn't played well. They've been swept 3 weekends in a row. Can you imagine the pressure on that LSU team that last weekend at home at Alex Box with Jay Johnson pulling the strings, I don't think that's a series that Florida can count. It's my honest opinion. I don't know that the Kentucky series is one they can count. I believe Florida has more talent than Kentucky, but especially if Kentucky finds a way to beat Tennessee, they're going to go to Florida looking to get a game too. And so you start thinking about Florida's at 11-10. Can they get to 16 wins? Well, they got to go 5-4, right? Which means you got to probably win two series and then not get swept in the other. And I don't know right now. Maybe you look at them in Florida and Kentucky and say, you know, well, Florida should win that series. Okay, well, that gets you two. You got to get another win somewhere else, unless you can sweep Kentucky, which I don't expect. And so, again, the pressure of going to Alex Box the last weekend when they're fighting for their lives, and then there's this series, which is really a coin flip, right? Now, you would think if you're Florida, it's okay, this is probably our most difficult series left. Ordinarily, you'd say going to Alex Box last weekend would be. But I think because of what's ahead of them, the one more home series against Kentucky and then traveling to LSU, and that's two teams in the back half of the league, I think they're going to give Florida their full attention because I don't think anything else is a given. Now, South Carolina's at LSU. Now, based on what you've seen from, like right now, you never know that this is basically a battle for 15th place in the Southeastern Conference because South Carolina took two from Kentucky last week, and then there's LSU that's just four games above 500. Isn't that crazy to think about? South Carolina's actually 14th in the league, a game ahead of LSU. So this will be an interesting dynamic. Playing LSU at home in the month of May, to me, is always dicey. But I think there's some guys on an LSU team that are about ready to quit. I really do. I just don't feel it. But I like LSU to take two out of three. The final series, and I think probably the one that nobody's talking about enough, is Auburn going to A&M. Now, while I don't think we can catch Georgia, we have the opportunity to catch Texas and Texas A&M. Now, we play them both head-to-head, but you're probably going to need some help to stay ahead, right? Auburn, with their pitching against this A&M offense, it's a contrast in styles. But my goodness, in the event that Auburn can keep the ball in the ballpark, I think the Tigers can get this thing. I'm going to pick A&M to take it 2-1, but I will not be surprised at all if Auburn wins this series. This is the number 7 team versus the number 8 team in the country. This is the team that's right behind us by a game, and it's a team that's a game and a half ahead of us. We got to go Texas, right? And Jim Schlossnagel said that the best offense they face so far is A&M, and he thinks Mississippi State might be even better. Now, some of that may be coach speaking, but if we're going to catch A&M and stay ahead of A&M, we probably need Auburn to win this series. Because if we go to A&M and win a series, we're not going to sweep them. Okay, I mean anything can happen. But so at best you're looking to pick up a game, but you got to get a couple other games somewhere else. And you know, Auburn, I think is one of those teams that's capable of pulling that off. You know, it's just the thing that I've learned about Butch Thompson is just when you forget about him is when you're making him the happiest, right? Because I think Butch just kind of likes tolling out there in obscurity. I don't think they want the headlines. They just want the dubs. It's a big difference. You don't see Butch Thompson out there, you know, ranting and raving on the SEC network and drawing attention to himself. He just kind of quietly goes about his business. But what's interesting about this A&M team and kind of what they have left is the fact that we know what happens the last weekend. You know, we got to go down there, and we're looking forward to it, you know. But then they got to go to Ole Miss. They get Auburn this week, one of the better pitching teams in the conference. Then they got to go to Ole Miss, who will be playing for the possibility to remain in a hosting discussion. And again, when Hunter Elliott and Townsend are both on, it's tough. And University Stadium, Swayze Field, is an offensive ballpark. So I think we could see some entertaining games there. And then you get Mississippi State. So A&M is going to play three teams that have a lot to play for in the final 3 weeks. And so you start again, you got to make up a game and a half. Well, you got to take care of business, but you need some other teams to kind of help you clean up the traffic. And I think of the teams that we play, you know, A&M is the one that probably has the schedule most comparable to us. So you find a way to finish two games better than A&M in the final nine, then you overtake A&M. Gives you a chance to finish in the top three. If you can overtake and stay ahead of Texas, gives you a chance to finish at number two. We'd absolutely want to be in the top four, but we want to be as high up as we can be, obviously, to improve our national seating. So we'll be scoreboard watching every game, but that's one of the things to kind of watch as we get ahead here. If you can be a game better than Texas, you're going to pass Texas. If you're two games better than A&M, you're going to pass A&M. We just got to take care of business and, again, hope that we have some people kind of help us out here. Because, again, it's just not realistic. While it's possible, it's not probable that you're going to catch Georgia. Barring something totally unforeseen, Georgia is going to be the SEC regular season champion. So we're all kind of playing for second. So that's what we're going to face, staying ahead of Auburn and gaining ground on Texas and Texas A&M. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, right? Bar none is the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. We've stayed there for New Year's of 25. We had a blast. We were going to do it again this year, but decided to take the show on the road. For those of you that live in Starkville, it can be a wonderful staycation for you. Six bedrooms, two, soon to be three baths. Plenty of amenities there. The full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the back porch area, the fire pit area. Plenty of parking. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. Right there. And maybe it's not a ball game weekend. Maybe it's some midweek adventures you want to take and just kind of come up and enjoy Starkville. Maybe you've got a little one on the way, and maybe taking a big trip somewhere far off is not good, but you maybe don't have enough room in your home to accommodate all your guests and say, hey, wouldn't it be great if we did this? Well, yeah, it would be. I can tell you from personal experience, it would be. You got some vacation time to spend, perhaps a break this summer. And rather than go to Disney World or the Redneck Riviera, maybe you just think, hey, let's save a little money this year and just go spend time and get all the cousins together. Wouldn't it be great to have everybody under one roof? Mom can come. She can make those cinnamon rolls for breakfast on Saturday morning. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Make some memories with the people you love the most. And the best venue to do that in is the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. That'll give you the opportunity, of course, to peruse all those wonderful amenities to you and your guests. But also, too, some booking options pop up, too. You can go Airbnb or Vrbo, VRBO, whichever you want to call it, if you want. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, the number 10, to save 10% off your stay. How special is that? You'll be glad you did. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse, be sure and check it out today. I was doing some thinking earlier. You know, we only got the one home weekend left, and then hopefully we host a regional. And barring a collapse of epic proportions, we will host a regional this year for the first time since 2021. I was just curious. You know, it's like we've had so much excitement and exuberance this year. How many 2026 crowds are now part of that top 25? Well, they're not just part of the top 25, they're part of the top 10. As you guys are aware, against LSU last weekend, we had 15,289 people. And that gave us the opportunity to take number three. So that's pretty special. You know, that's pretty special. But there are some other crowds this year that are of note. March 21st against Vanderbilt, we had 14,834. That's the sixth largest crowd. That's pretty special. Right? It is. That same weekend, we had 14,649. That's the number eight weekend. Pretty special, right? And maybe I've done the math wrong here. Maybe it was three. Yeah, maybe it is. But nevertheless, so we've done some historic things, but I don't believe we're done. And I think if we have a good weekend at Texas, we have a chance to probably put another top 10, potentially top five crowd together next weekend. Certainly, in the event that we host a regional, we'll probably do it that Saturday too. In the event we host a super, we'll probably do it again. So we're not done rewriting the attendance record book. But at the end of the day, I want to brag more about what we do on the field and not necessarily what we do at the turnstile. But I know those things are important for you, so I wanted to kind of share that with you as we kind of move ahead. Also, breaking news, and we'll give you some information here. Bulldogs have picked up a transfer from Washington State, Indy Okafor, 6'10", 11 points, 5.7 rebounds per game last year. As we kind of put this thing together, you know, with Chris Jans. So that's something we'll look forward to, adding him. And again, watching these portal classes coming together, it gives you some exuberance and excitement about next year. But of course, we're taking all that kind of with a grain of salt. Until we get everybody together and we see what they look like on the floor and we have a chance to see what the chemistry looks like and some cohesion looks like, you know, hey, we're going to hope for the best, but we're not going to get out over our skis a little bit like we did last year. And it's okay to believe. But last year's portal class was a huge disappointment, as you guys are well aware. We had a couple guys that made some contributions. By and large, the class itself wasn't very good. We hope this year's different. We got to hit on some guys. Also of note, for those of you that maybe haven't kept up, and that's my job, right, it's to keep up, is the NCAA is beginning to research and push for a new eligibility model, the 5 for 5. And that's one of the things that we have talked about extensively. Now, that would not apply to anybody that's a senior this year, okay, so if you've had a quarterback that's already gotten an injunction, he's not going to get another year. Okay, you've already manipulated a system enough. He won't be granted that, right? So they're saying 5 for 5, and that starts based on your last year, the high school graduation, or 19, whichever comes first. There are some exceptions. There's pregnancy, military service, religious missions like BYU. They have a lot of those players that go do mission trips and things of that nature. And so that doesn't count towards the eligibility. Outside of that, they say the waivers are going to be very difficult to come by. There will be some medical exceptions, but it's not going to be like that. We've had people in the past that have gotten a medical hardship year basically because they got their feelings hurt. And that's not hyperbole. That's not me just, you know, talking poorly about a new generation. There's a lot of people, basically, because people are scared of the mental health aspect of things, you know, it's going to be more difficult to get those now. So, like, you're going to have to actually be under the care of a doctor. You're going to have a diagnosable condition. It's not just going to be because you got the blues, right? It's just kind of life. But the 5 for 5 model eliminates the redshirt year. So you don't have to hold guys back if they're ready. You don't have to start measuring games and say, hey, well, this is the fourth game, so we can't play them the rest of the year. So that's going to give you a little more roster flexibility. But the reality of it is not a lot of freshmen are going to be ready to play as freshmen. But the good thing is when you have those blowout games, those FCS games, or maybe a game where you get kind of run off the field, you can rest some guys. And you can give younger guys the opportunity to play without harming their eligibility. And that's a wonderful thing. Now, this is going to be challenged in court, basically kind of as an antitrust thing, right? They're going to argue, much like Diego Pavia did, and that's really this whole eligibility model is kind of a byproduct of what the Diego Pavia case brought to light, right? They were trying to argue that the junior college years shouldn't count because it was with a different organization. I completely disagree with that. Completely disagree. So this will kind of eliminate that. We're going to make it more of an age-based model. So if you play 2 years at JUCO, chances are that's going to count. Now, that's not officially in the language as the proposal is written, and it's something that will be kind of fleshed out. And that's one of the things, as well as you as I know as well as I do, is that they're going to make sure that's included. You know, that, hey, if you go play 2 years at JUCO and you show up here, that's going to count. When you begin to think about the way that these lawsuits have manipulated the system, guys having seven schools in 7 years, that's not within the spirit of the initial rule. And there's always going to be exceptions. It's one thing if a guy has a debilitating injury or something like that. Listen, we all get that. But the rule has always been, you know, you get the one medical hardship year, right? Like if you've already exhausted your redshirt year and you got hurt again, then, hey, if you had a season-ending injury that required surgery or something like that, then, yeah, we don't want you to go out there and play when you're banged up and potentially have a life-altering injury. So it was kind of expected. But there have been some that have had 2 years. Now, we like think of Seth Davis, right? And God bless Seth Davis. Great kid, right? I don't know that he was ever going to play at the level some of you thought. And some of that's because he had a hype man in the media. But he's a good player. But like that ACL injury, the knee injury he had, even after 2 years of hard work on his behalf and 2 years of medical treatment, he still wasn't quite right. So if you have a situation like that, I think you would say, hey, let's just step in here. We'll give him the 2 years. It took him 2 years to recover, so we'll give him those 2 years of eligibility back. And, of course, those are going to be the more extreme cases. And that's important to understand. Those are going to be exceptions. But what we have seen in recent years is the exception became the rule, and everybody had some exception. You know, the fact that tonsillitis gets you an extra year is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It is. And I would say the same if it was our people, just like Dwight Lewis, right? Dwight Lewis, a great young man. Wish him and his family the best in the future. But Dwight Lewis redshirted and then didn't play as a redshirt freshman. He goes, well, I got redshirted twice. No, you just weren't good enough to play as a redshirt freshman. So you don't get that year back. You can't retroactively go back and say, hey, I deserve to play for 4 years. No, you just get to be eligible for 4 years. Now you get to be eligible for 5 years, but you don't get the, quote, benefit of a redshirt. Your redshirt year, you're eligible to play all 12 games. So that could be an interesting dynamic. But again, what they're going to allege, I'm sure there'll be legal challenges as soon as the policy is adopted, that argue about antitrust, that they're denying me the opportunity to make money with name, image, and likeness, which again is a Pandora's box that we knew would open. Before, it was all about eligibility, right? I need to be eligible and be healthy and give myself a chance to showcase my talents in hopes of playing sports professionally. Well, now, basically, college athletics is professional sports. And so now they're saying, hey, you're denying me the chance to make a living. And I just don't agree with that. And that's why I think that the NCAA deserves to have antitrust exemption. Because what we have done now in the court system is basically said amateurism doesn't matter. Eligibility is a sliding scale. And that all of this now is about their ability to make rev share and NIL money. So the agents obviously don't want antitrust exemption because they want to hold people's feet to the fire because, hey, If I get a client and every time he transfers, I make more money, well, I'm going to keep him in a transfer portal. I had an SEC leader tell me some time ago, he goes, if I was an agent, I would have all of my clients threaten to or enter the NCAA transfer portal every single year. Every single year. Because the school that they're at is going to pay more money to keep them, or somebody else in the open market is going to pay more money to get them. But either way, me and my client both make more money than we would make if we stayed at the same school for 4 years. And the fact that that line of thinking is even the reality of the situation is scary. And again, we knew 5 years ago when this thing became legal, it was going to take us years to get some guardrails around it. And every year, things get a little bit better. And they thought introducing rev share was going to help some on the NIL side of things. And it has in some respects. But now we've got these people that are basically trying to prolong the careers of these athletes, not because of what they think is best for them, but it's because it's best for the agent. And that's one of the things, again, we've got to have sweeping change when it comes to regulation of these agents. It's getting better, right? It's getting better. And a lot of it's because young people are learning and talking to each other. It's like, yeah, go with this guy. He's going to get you the best deal. He's got better relationships. In the beginning, it would just be some dude. You know, it'd just be some guy, 7-on-7 coach, or, you know, a guy from the neighborhood or whatever. And, hey, I'm acting as his agent. They weren't licensed. They didn't know anything about all the stuff. And it was kind of wild, wild west. There's still some of that, but it is getting better. Talking to, you know, coaches around the league, they say, yeah, we're getting a lot more kind of a dignified relationship with agents. And some of these agents, again, are a little bit sketchy, but things are getting better. But we need to ensure that, number one, we know who these people are, that they are licensed by the state, and that they can be then sanctioned by the state if something is improper. That's an important aspect of this, because a lot of these young people, and many of them, are the first members of their family to ever go to college. And so you've got a family that doesn't know a lot about the business side of sports, and somebody's like, hey, I can get you the deal. And so, yeah, they're charging a higher percentage to do it. And so there's got to be caps and all that. There has to be some structure in what we're doing. And the fact that it's taken us this long to get there is a little bit embarrassing. And again, I go back, I hate to keep dumping dirt on Mark Emmert, but we had a chance to get out ahead of this with the NCAA, and they just chose not to do it. They knew it was coming, and then once it happened, once it got into the state courts, it became an absolute fiasco. But had they had the forethought and the leadership to say, hey, we're staring down the barrel of a loaded gun right here, we need to go ahead and take some steps nationwide to say this is going to be our policy, and it would have been challenged, but if you get out in front of it before we have all this fragmented state rights stuff, chances are it would have been a tidy undertaking, or a more tidy undertaking. It's not now, but we're getting there. We're getting there, and that's important to understand. So, yes, I'm absolutely in favor of the five-year model. And one of the things that I think about, obviously you know how it impacts football and basketball. But think about baseball, right? You have a lot of guys, obviously, that need to get on the field because they want to get drafted as juniors. Well, now, if you give them 5 years, I think it gives those guys more time to develop, and also guys won't rush to sign because of the fact, number one, they have more leverage. Rather than have 1 year of leverage as a junior, they'll have two. You know, we've had some draft-eligible sophomores. Obviously, we lose Dave Mershon and Dakota Jordan the same year dealing with that. But the more eligibility you have for college baseball, softball, sports like that, but especially specifically baseball, as we are a baseball school, it gives them that extra year to not only have leverage, but also to get their degree. You know, there's a lot of players out there. I don't know if you saw, like, Kevin Copps from Arkansas got released. You know, bounced around the minors for a few years. You know, he was the Golden Spikes winner in 2021. Arkansas was the number one team in the NCAA tournament. They got beat in the it was a regional or super regional. I can't remember which. But you know, they're always calling the cops, right? And cops has kind of been up and down in the minors, and he got released. Now, I hope he's got his degree. I don't know that he does. You know, but a lot of the junior contracts that MLB signed with people is they would give them money to go back to school and finish their degree. So you had some assurity of doing that. But how many people actually go back? I'd like to see the numbers on that. But if you have a situation where, hey, I can play 4 years, get my diploma, and then have the option to go pro or return for a fifth year, that gives you some built-in leverage that did not exist before. And I think in the end, it probably saves MLB some money, right, in that respect, rather than having to cut a check and pay for everybody's college education, right? I mean, not that MLB is suffering by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just interesting to think about the ramifications of all of this. But again, as you and I both know, years ago, the whole thing was about, you know, graduation rates, right? That was a huge thing. Which school graduated, had the highest APR and things of that nature, who was making academic progress, and there were degree progress requirements by the NCAA, you know, in regarding your eligibility. If you weren't like 60% of the way towards your degree by your junior year, you couldn't play as a senior. Well, all that's basically gone out the window because now it's about NIL earning potential. It's so interesting, the conversations that we're having these days. It's not so much about, hey, you guys didn't give him long enough to get his degree. No, you didn't give him long enough to maximize his earning potential. I still go back to one of the things that we talked about years ago is what are we, you know, how are we preparing these young people and socializing them for life? And listen, I believe, hey, get every dime you can get, right? Everything that you, your talent affords you, you have a right to. I believe that. There's a lot of people that got rich for many, many years selling jerseys, selling the name, image, and likeness of players, and the players did not profit in any of that. And that was wrong. It was. I think we can all agree, right? Jake Mangum, Dak Prescott, Tierra McCowan, Victoria Vivians, all those players, they deserved to make some coin off people buying their jersey. They didn't. And that was wrong. But as things are kind of shaping up now, it's a much different dynamic with the rev share, right? And so that's one of those things that I think kind of has to be considered is, you know, what's our focus? Are we even concerned anymore about graduating players? We should be, right? We should want as many alums as we can get. But the thing that I consider is, if you're making $500,000 a year playing college football, and there are people making that and more, how are you going to adjust to life when sports ends and you take an entry-level position with some company making 50 grand a year? How are you going to adjust your standard of living, right? What does that do for the mental health aspect of this? Yeah, there's no wonder that these agents want these kids to stay in school longer and stay in the college model and get 6 and 7 and 8 years of eligibility just because they themselves profit. But what happens at the end of all this? And I thought Mike Leach made a great point, and it would never happen because nobody would ever agree to it, that profited from it is, you know, what if you put the NIL, and you know, the time we didn't have rev share, but the money that they made and they accrued, what if you put that like in a trust fund and then they're able to access it when they graduated and it gives them a head start at life? Makes a lot of sense to me. But nobody wants to incentivize that aspect of it. We just want our money and we want it right now. You know, we got to go get a fancy car. We got to take a fast trip. Hey, listen, it's good work if you can get it. It is. But our priorities are all off kilter. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And I don't know how much of it could have been prevented, but some of this could have been prevented if we'd gotten out in front of it. We didn't, so now we're cleaning up the mess. And I think Charlie Baker's doing the best that he can. I think Greg Sankey is, and it's one of the things to consider too. You know, you keep hearing about these things, and you keep seeing these presidents come out and say, well, maybe we should enforce ourselves. Well, the SEC is obviously not going to put more rules on themselves that are more restrictive than what the NCAA already has. But there's got to be some rules for tampering. And that's one of the things, too, that kind of people aren't really talking about is, you know, schools are no longer like required. Like if they have a rev share agreement, they're not required to go put you in the portal for a while until that's resolved, until the rev share contract is resolved. And so again, some of that is to prohibit tampering. And as you guys are well aware, you know, Iowa's been sanctioned for tampering. And we still don't know what's going to happen with this Ole Miss Clemson thing. It pops up every now and again in the news cycle. But again, that's probably the most egregious example of tampering that we've had in a modern era. And yeah, I do believe some sanctions come from that. How severe they prove to be, who knows. But the NCAA can't allow a program as squeaky clean as Clemson to be victimized by a school that used their head coach that knew a kid wasn't in the portal and basically negotiated a contract to get him into the portal. I mean, that is textbook tampering. I don't care what anybody else says. And everybody, it's like people want to excuse it and justify it and say, well, it's a new world, Steve. And you're right, it's a new world. But even the new world's got to have rules. Finally, I've read a lot of varying opinions about playing the Governor's Cup game. And yeah, Brian O'Connor brought up a good point, too. Nobody in the SEC does it. It's true. They don't. But Florida still plays Florida State. South Carolina still plays Clemson. And I believe there's another handful of schools out there that are rivals that are not conference opponents that play those games. So nobody in the SEC plays another SEC team as part of their non-conference schedule. But there are a lot of schools out there in the Power Four that do play other Power Four teams regularly. Like Auburn picked up Georgia Tech this last couple years, right? So you beef up your schedule. And if we're going to do that anyway, it makes sense that State and Ole Miss would play each other. They sold every ticket they had. And listen, it was a sellout crowd, but it wasn't a capacity crowd due to weather. But I've seen a lot of people make a lot of complaints. A few things I'll say. A lot of the people complaining didn't come to the game. And obviously, I was not out there enjoying the fan experience the entire time. But before the game, I went down to concessions, and there was a short line, and things moved quickly, and they had everything. The service was nice. Everybody was friendly. So I don't know what you experienced, but that was my experience. And, of course, I wasn't running down to get M&Ms in the seventh inning, you know. You know, people talk about the turf. It's relatively new turf. It hadn't really been seasoned in. And everybody talks about the Will Furness slide. Listen, I don't know what happened with Will. I don't know. You'll have to ask him. But I know he didn't slip on that little flap that they showed in all these clip videos because he was already tumbling before then. Was there something else wrong with the turf before there? Maybe. I don't know. But I know nobody else appeared to have a problem with it. And what I mean by that is nobody else's path to the base was impeded. So maybe he just stumbled. I don't know. Maybe there was a problem with the turf. I don't know that either. But again, I know a lot of people have strong opinions that weren't there. And they're just basing on what they see the social media traffic and they assume that those things are correct. And you don't know that. But I would hate to see Central Mississippi lose another big sporting event. Sure. Yeah. But more importantly, I think about the fans. Right? And you'll see it out there in the social media traffic. Like, you know, people are like, hey, we can't always get to Oxford or Starkville for a game. You know, and when you guys come here in the midweek, we can attend that game. And some people have said, hey, let's go play it in Biloxi. And you know what? I think that's fine too. I'd be fine taking it to Biloxi. But I don't think it's just because of Tuesday. You know, that's an aging facility. But clearly there's a lot of fan interest in the game, you know, and wasn't 2 years ago, you know, Southern Miss and Ole Miss had to cancel that game because of the field conditions at Trustmark. And so I think what you do is you go to the folks that are at Trustmark and say, listen, we want to continue to have the game here. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have the Governor's Cup game play in Biloxi. We'd like to have it here, but there's some things that are going to have to be fixed. And you negotiate that. And then if they don't meet it, then you consider going down to Biloxi. I don't think you just decide this week, okay, we're not going to do that again. It's tradition, and I'm not saying that's always the best reason to do things, but it also gives both teams a quad one opponent. I just don't want to play it this late in the year. I mean, it's 3 weeks, like this series this weekend for Ole Miss at Arkansas, huge. This series for State at Texas, huge. Hey, if we didn't have to pitch on Tuesday, you could probably have a couple more arms fresh and available for the weekend series. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? So having it this late in the year, I don't think makes a lot of sense. But this talk about, hey, whoever wins the series or whatever, whoever hosts the series, then, you know, the other team gets the opportunity to host the governor's game. I don't think that's good either. As a kid that grew up in South Mississippi, we could never get to Starkville, it seemed like, ever. So, but when the Bulldogs came to Jackson, that was reasonable for us. And so we could make that work. And there's a lot of young people out there that can't make it. I think the prices have to come down on tickets. I mean, it's gotten kind of ridiculous, truthfully. But the flip side of it is they sold every ticket. So it's kind of hard for me to tell them, hey, you need to bring your prices down to make it more affordable. You know, they're trying to make as much money as they possibly can on these events. And so it's hard for me to say the prices are a deterrent when you sell every ticket. And I believe what they told me was the third largest crowd from a ticket sale standpoint. So, you know, we'll see. But no, I'm in favor of keeping the game. I think you can fix it. And then if they don't want to fix it, then you can move on. But I think you got to give them a chance to fix it. And this whole thing about the turf, I think is way overblown. Way overblown. That's my personal feelings. And that's not a shot at Will Furness. He, you know, guys had a very good career at Ole Miss. You know, maybe he had a cleat catch, you know, an edge on that turf. But I don't think it had anything to do with that Velcro flap that they showed. Again, if you go back and look at the video, he was already on his way down by the time he passed that. And, of course, people tell you on turf, especially wet, you want to slide a little bit early so you don't overslide the back. And maybe that's in his mind. I don't know. But I think some people are being a little bit dramatic about all that. And, of course, those people, again, didn't attend the game. Well, that's going to do it for today. If you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can get signed copies of all my sports titles, plus When the Bottom Falls. And if you're looking for a great Mother's Day gift, and I'm sure you are, you can get two floats for $99 at True Rest Floats by Starkville. Go ahead and let the phone ring off the hook. Yeah, when I call her and she goes, hey, I got to let you go. Somebody's calling. I go up there. I got to answer my phone. Can you do this? I love it. I love anything that keeps the register ringing. And you know, Dana loves what she does. And listen, I'm a person that has struggled with anxiety much of my life. Nothing's been better for me than floating. That's my personal experience. If you're a person that's got chronic pain or anxiety or you just need a break, we may be able to help you because we've helped many others, right? And so come check it out. You'll be glad you did. That's True Rest Floats by Starkville. Dial 662-268-7601. And come join us over at jeanspage.com right now, 50% off the annual subscription price. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.